Hey, America!
Start listening now!
Oh, that sounded good, y'all.
Oh, mm-hmm. Hi, everybody.
It's in unison. Yeah. We hit our full SATB split. It's really nice.
I'm the baritone.
I took soprano.
Yeah. speaking of songs, Danny, I hear you have a song ready for our 100th show.
Yeah. Entertain us.
Festive. It's a little ditty. 100 episodes of 12 Points from America on the wall. 100 episodes of 12 Points of America on the wall. Take one down for copyright infringement. 99 episodes of 12 Points of America on the wall.
And welcome to another infringement-y episode of 12 Points from America, a Eurovision podcast from America, the country that's 100 feet tall. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
I'm Danny.
And holy crap, this is our 100th show.
Yeah, it's not impressive that the listeners made it this far. It's impressive that we made it this far.
Yeah, we're impressive.
It's about time we start a spinoff series.
Yeah.
Well, funny you should say.
One of us is going to move to Seattle and start their own show.
I was going to say, actually, a spinoff series is not unheard of because we will be having America Vision within the next 12 months. Mm-hmm. We'll probably just cover it on this show.
Also, since this is the 100th episode, we're going to finally find out which one of us is the killer.
I thought we were going to finally reveal the neighbor's face from behind the fence.
Never going to happen.
He never had a lower jaw. That's the thing. Yeah.
Speaking of lower jaws, Sam, hit him with the social.
Wow, that segue though. Yeah, you can find us on social media. So many of you have to toss questions at us, our hot questions, our cold questions, all that good stuff. But you can find us on social media on Facebook or Twitter at 12pointsUSA. Just email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com or find us on YouTube as well. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to support us, we do have a Redbubble with all sorts of wonderful and sweet and random merchandise that you can help support the show in a little way. And honestly, there might be other ways that you could support the show coming up in the near future. We will probably get to that at some point soon. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for that. So we're all together in the same room. We're waiting for our Indian food to be delivered to us.
Yes.
So as we wait for our non to arrive, why don't we just answer some of these incredible questions that listeners have been sending us?
Let's rock and roll.
Yeah.
Where do we want to start?
You know what? There were two people who asked sort of a similar question. Kind of want to cover them both in one fell swoop. Again, thank you all for sending these questions our way. Ayatel Shear asks, I've got a burning question for you. What are your Eurovision origin stories? What were the moments that pulled you into Eurovision? Sorry if you've answered it before. I'm a new fan of the show, but a big one. And Aya's moment was Norway 2005. That would have been In My Dreams by Wigwam.
Oh, man.
Glam rock, the coolest thing the 12-year-old Aya had ever seen. Similarly, our friend Craig Butterly asked, question, does anybody have a song that was your gateway drug to Eurovision? Eurovision was always bubbling in the background since 2013 for Craig. Listening to Triple J, Home of Montaigne, Kate Miller Hyde, he was the only station that Craig would listen to. Then Rhythm Inside by Loic Notet hit. Bought it on iTunes, hasn't looked back. So what were those moments for us?
Was Rhythm Inside?
Yeah. You are the only one at this table.
I'm positive I'm the only person in, like, the Northern Hemisphere who does not like.
I'm surprised they let you into Belgium.
I don't. We had to sneak in.
Yeah.
He did tunnel in from Luxembourg.
He shaved the beard. They didn't recognize him.
So who wants to start? What were your origin stories? What were the moments that got you into the contest?
I think all three of us can just safely say Sam.
Yeah, I mean, it's Sam. It's because of Sam.
For me specifically, it's going to Sam's Eurovision party, and I was late from, I had just been to a callback, and so I came in halfway through the Eurovision party, and it was Netta's toy. That was the one that came up. But my first, like, for real, like, exposure to modern Eurovision, that's it.
If I remember correctly, I had played Toy earlier that night.
It had just played.
Yeah.
Voting finished, then I came in through the door, and we were like, okay, let's watch it again, because we need Danny's vote, and so I saw that.
One, because we needed Danny's vote, and two, I think everybody else kind of needed to process it
again. To watch it again. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was...
Except Derek.
Nope.
He had his opinion already on this.
Fishaw.
I mean, mine is similar. I know Sam through Quiz Bowl stuff. And Sam and I were carpooling to a tournament that's 45 minutes, an hour out of the city where we live.
Shout out to St. Olaf College.
Yeah, it's a place. And got him. And we didn't know each other especially well at that point. So Sam started talking about Eurovision, which
That's so on brand for me. It's like, there's this guy who I don't really know who's in my car. I'm going to talk his ear off about Eurovision.
That's right. I knew about ABBA, and I knew about Lordi for some reason. Like I knew a bit about Eurovision. Like you never go like Wikipedia surfing from page to page and you just learn about stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
Just making sure it's not just me. And I definitely remember coming across Eurovision a time or two, or reading up on it, thinking like, God, this seems like a weird and interesting thing. But I never really went any further than that. And then I went to Sam's Eurovision party in 2014. And the song that really got me was Calm After the Storm, which remains one of my favorites. And it was just a great example of how different these songs can be and how cool they can be and so on. Not that everything I heard before that was trash. Some of it was. But you know, it really stood out words in a way that I wasn't expecting. So that was the one that really had me hooked. But by the end of the whole thing, I was just like, this is the best thing. I'm obsessed with this now. And now I've done 100 episodes of a podcast just rambling about it. So that's that.
Dare. Hi. First exposure was my brother did a report for a class, and he had to do it on a country as a sort of a travel agency sort of pitch. Like, come to this country and see these amazing sights. And
it was Finland.
Okay.
You guys gotta see France. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, the Paris syndrome. That's just a myth. Don't worry. What is it? And he did it all on Finland because of Lordi. And I think this was right around the time they'd won, because he was in college. So we had this whole presentation that was Lordi themed and highlighted all the things in Finland. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? And he started talking about, oh yeah, there's this big song contest and this weird Gwar-esque band that all their music videos look like Evil Dead won the whole thing and they got to host it. And I'm like, all right. And his little slogan was, come to Finland and meet Lordi. And I was like, cool. And then a year later, I was at karaoke with some people and they had Hard Rock Hallelujah. And I'm like, I know that song. Let's do it. And everyone was like, what the hell is this?
The best thing you can do at karaoke.
Yeah.
Is confuse.
Then confuse everybody. And then,
did you ever speak to those people again?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll talk to them.
Huh? It's like that's the way to test a friendship right there is to
Lordi? No, that's not the worst song we did at karaoke, trust me.
That's a story for another time.
And then years later, Sam is like, hey, have you heard of this Eurovision thing that I'm completely obsessed with? And I'm like, no, tell me more.
Yeah. Amy, for me, it's a little bit older. I was kind of like vaguely aware of the contest ever since I was a kid. Like, I knew that like the phrase Eurovision Song Contest was a thing. I grew up in a vaguely Anglophilic household, so I watched a lot of Monty Python as a kid, and they mentioned the song called Sing Little Birdie, so I knew it was a thing.
Oh, Sing Little Birdie.
And when you know, I was studying for my bat mitzvah around the time that Donna International was you know, winning, and so I was like, I knew that there was this show, this contest, this big old music festival on the other side of the world. And when I was in college, I went to a school with, at the time, about a 20% international student population. So like every springtime, all the European students would kind of be chattering amongst each other about, you know, who had the best song. And I kind of got sucked into it. So I think the first show that I watched in its entirety would have been maybe 2005-ish. And
you stuck with it.
I stuck with it.
Take that, 2005.
I was really, really tempted to actually skip my college graduation because it was at the same time as the 2007 contest. I know my parents would have killed me. It would have been a great show. But yeah, the moment that I got back to my dorm, you know, still the cap and gown, I was on the BBC website trying to see who won. And I was a fan. I was just geeking out about it. So I think
it's infectious.
It is infectious. It is. And I obviously infected the three of you here. So
you sure did, Sam.
Hey.
All right. First total tangent question. What's the worst song you've heard someone do at karaoke? I'll go first. Hurt by Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, sure. Oh. Yeah, that's pretty popular. I can't remember exactly what song it is, but there's a down-tempo journey love ballad, like a power ballad, that this old man at the karaoke place that we used to go to would sing literally every single time that we were there. Like, he was probably the owner. I don't even know the name of this song. It's that bad. All I know is it's Journey.
I was on a cruise once, and there was this woman who every single time karaoke would happen, it was like every other night on the ship, she would go up and sing When Johnny Comes Marching Home Again.
What? No. Okay, what? Never mind. Okay, so that actually reminds me. No, the worst song I've ever heard someone do at karaoke was in River Falls when I was at college. They did There's a Hole in My Bucket, Dear Liza. There are so many verses to that song. The karaoke version went on for like 7 minutes.
Oh.
They didn't want to be up there, but I think the guy running karaoke just wanted to punish them.
That's evil.
Oh, I think my worst is they had the theme song from The Simpsons. Which is just,
just someone goes, The Simpsons. And then they sit back and rake in the cash.
Yeah, they just sit there for a minute listening to the Danny Elfman thing.
You know, that being said, if somebody went on to karaoke on stage and just sang Tequila...
Yeah, I've seen that.
That would be, epic. That would be amazing. That's epic. I think somebody did that at a Georgia National final a couple years ago.
I want to stress, now that we've heard all of these, I'm not saying that Hurt is a bad song. It's an amazing, it's a brilliant song. It's just a terrible choice for karaoke. My God.
All right. So we have so many questions that were launched at us. I think somewhere in the 70s or 80s. And
fire up the question launcher.
Yeah. So we've got a random number generator to fire some of these at. Some of them are in-depth and serious and highbrow. And some of them are absolutely off the wall. So,
some of them we took a little look at before because some of them were just so interesting. We were like, well, I really do hope we get to these. But there are many that we will be... basically spoiler free from. So yeah, let's spin the big wheel.
Okay, our first question comes from Lisa Jane Lewis via Facebook, and the question is, have you ever punched a koala?
No.
I was just thinking about this. Also no.
I've been attacked by a swan at Disney World.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, swans are nasty, nasty. Mm-hmm. They're beautiful, but they are the high school like popular kids. Of the animal kingdom.
Oh, they're dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I had I was in Boston Common, and a squirrel tried to climb me.
Oh.
I just almost had a squirrel jump at me out of a trash can when I went and voted. And this thing was huge. It was so huge I could see, like, the individual claws on its feet. Disgusting. Also, I found out that Australia doesn't actually have squirrels, so good for them.
They have drop bears and hoop snakes.
Yes.
This has already generated more discussion than I expected. Yeah. Also, Derek has been weirdly silent. I think he has punched a koala.
You're the only one of us who's been to Australia.
He hasn't punched a koala, but he has had an erotic dream about Scott Morrison.
How did you know? No, I did go to a zoo in Australia where they let us pet koalas. They're surprisingly soft.
A low-velocity punch.
Aren't they disgustingly diseased?
The koalas? Ones in captivity are taken care of. In the wild, they're horrifically diseased, but they have a vaccine now.
There's a koala vaccine?
There is indeed.
Just so if you take it, you're not a koala anymore?
Yes.
Or like, oh, okay.
So like an Island of Dr. Moreau kind
That's
of
cool. That never comes up.
A koala with three butts.
Anyway, our next question.
Okay, our next question comes from John Stanton over at ESC Ireland.
John
Stamos?
Oh. Yes. If you had two heads, which mouth would you choose to eat cheese with?
Both of them. Duh.
Weren't we just talking about the cheese boat before we started recording?
We did talk about the 30-minute conversation
about ketchup.
I think the unanimous answer is we use both of them, and we use them specifically to eat the cheese boat, which is from Georgia?
It is from Georgia. The Khachapuri Ajarouli.
Ajarouli is... Yeah, I was in Washington, D.C. A couple weeks ago, and I went with a good friend I have out there to a Georgian restaurant, and we had, the cheese boat. Actually, we ended up having two cheese boats because it's so good. I don't understand how this isn't a huge thing here. Like, this is exactly the sort of thing Americans would eat, just if it was put in front of them.
Bread, cheese, eggs, and butter.
Yeah. Like,
how is this not on every street corner in America, especially in the upper Midwest?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
All right.
What kind of bread is it?
It's soft and pillowy and
delicious. It's like a pizza dough.
Yeah.
Slightly crusty on the outside.
It's a fairly simple... Okay. Yeah. Like leavened white bread.
Yeah, it's not the star of the show, so to speak.
I was going
to
say, so it's not like the cheesy bread you get at your cafeteria in middle school.
No.
No.
Jesus,
no. How dare you? How very dare you, Danny Bokov?
That is interesting what you were saying, like how there are a bunch of countries in Europe that have a Georgian diaspora. And that's just something that we don't have here. Georgian immigrants and Georgian migration never really came over here.
No, they knew what was up. Really. I mean, if anything,
they got out while they could.
Is there a state or a city with a sizable Georgian population?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there would be in some larger city like.
I would guess New York is reasonably represented.
I know there's a massive Armenian population in places like the Los Angeles area. Yeah. Wouldn't be surprised if maybe there was some as well. But I don't know. I don't know the depth of Georgian migration patterns.
Ask us all your Georgian questions next week on 12 Points from America.
That's right. Stay tuned. All right.
The future winner of Stacey Abrams on to specifically answer the questions.
All right. Our next question comes from a friend of the show, Jose Rivera. Jose, thank you for the question. He said, hey guys, congrats on 100 episodes. Thank you. Thank you for the past few years of Eurovision insanity. You're welcome.
Yeah.
And here's my burning question. What national final entry from any year do you wish would have made it to the big show?
It's a can of worms.
You can put anything in you want for any reason.
I got mine.
All right. Go ahead.
All right. And this is actually a perfect segue to something that we are going to be launching this week. It's our first in a series of YouTube videos. So
is this the British one?
No. Well, I mean, that's another one. That's another. But yes, scope out our YouTube page for a video that we're going to be launching this week where we decide to foist a bunch of Eurovision's, some are forgotten classics, some are songs that you didn't realize that you knew that you would love, but mostly it's just trying to get Danny's reaction.
Upon me. Yeah, the ghosts of Eurovision past. And just like in A Christmas Carol, some of the ghosts are more benign than others.
Yeah.
Some of them are legitimate specters of doom, though.
Yes, and one of the specters of doom that I will always hold close to my heart is an Estonian song from the 2013 National Final by a band called Winnie Pooh. With the song Mea Kundimes Uks Korsakov Laxelelati, which is 3 minutes of high-pitched screaming and people being suspended by the
ankles. Yeah, I was going to say, just shredding guitars upside down.
Giant balalaikas the sizes of moderately sized children. and it came in third place in Esilau that year and was beaten by a ballad.
It did okay.
The ballad made it to the final, which is nice, but it wasn't Winnie Pooh.
Right.
And to see the reaction of at least these three guys with Winnie Pooh, again, scope out our YouTube channel. Hopefully,
thrilled. I was thrilled.
Yeah. Hopefully it's the first of many, many episodes like this where we will check out some of these golden classics from yesteryear.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Winnie Pooh, that is my pick.
Mm-hmm. I don't go too deep into the national finals, and I think that's going to change this year because I liked to have a lot of the songs fresh for me when we did our first blush look at them. But this last year, I took just sort of a cursory glance at what was happening in both Norway and Sweden for their finals. And so I don't have a lot to pull from, but I still have to say that Tix should not have come this year, and we should have. I'm just going to say, you know, if I would have been able to have Let Loose by Blas Mafian come instead, I would have vastly preferred that.
That was really fun. I think it would have done pretty well.
Yeah.
So it would have done better than Fallen Angel did.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
I would say, honestly, the first one that comes to mind is Ben and Tan.
Oh, yeah.
Which was from a national final. And in fact, it won a national final. It was just for the year that there wasn't a Eurovision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that's a big one, really, really big one. Other one that comes to mind, I would say, is Karen Park's Human Being.
Yeah.
From
Norway. And so it lost the spot to A Monster Like Me, which is fine. That's a defensible choice. But Human Being is just so good, and Karen is such a enigmatic performer.
Mm.
It would have been very, very, very cool to see her on the big stage like that.
Yeah.
Kind of surprised I haven't heard her really since much. I mean, she's been involved in other songs.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, like, kind of keeping up with the national finals as closely as I have been. I just haven't heard her name much in the last few years. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to see her go at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the music she has released as a solo artist since 2015 has been, and this doesn't mean it can't be sent to Eurovision, but I will say it has been weirder. It's very aggressive art pop sort of a thing. And so...
There it is.
Oh, hey, the Indian food's here. Derek, do we have any Indian food eating music we can play before we come back?
Sure.
Let's just hit it. Oh, that was good. That was great.
So much food.
Thanks for sharing me. There's that much.
Yeah. You at home can eat Indian food as well.
Eat along with this episode.
Yeah.
Like in 4D.
Yeah.
All right, Derek.
Derek, what's your song that you would sneak in to the contest, Nicolas Cage style?
For the record, Danny is playing with a pug right now, and that's not a euphemism.
Yeah, so if you hear any, like, grunting and snorting in the background, it's
Danny's
not
really
me,
enjoying
it's
it.
Just a pig. Yeah, it's me.
So weird.
Like, anyway, Derek.
100 episodes in, this is what you got.
Yeah, this is our 100th and last episode. That's not true.
I always go back to Margaret's Cool Me Down. I think it had a real shot at winning. Yeah, I remember like going into the Polish national final. It was just assumed it was going to win, and when it didn't, it like Poland dropped in the betting odds like 15 spots immediately.
15?
It was, wow. it was like
straight down to the middle.
Lead balloon.
What was it like? It was like fourth or fifth, and then it dropped down to like 25.
I'm not surprised. I shouldn't say that. I am surprised that it wasn't higher. I mean, honestly, I think if Cool Me Down had made it, it would have been top three comfortably. I think I think it could have won.
Yeah, I just watched this during the break, and that it's impressive. It's
against 1944, though.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's that year.
The poetic beauty of Ukraine beating Russia in that year is something that I'm glad was not taken away from us.
That was so delicious.
That being said. Cool Me Down would have shaken things up a lot.
Oh yeah. Especially if you look at those top three.
Russia might have lost even harder.
Yeah. Well, it was Ukraine, Australia, and Russia. And I think Bulgaria was fourth that year.
That was if Love Was a Crime year?
Yep.
Okay.
But then suddenly it became a contender. Oh yeah, Poland. Poland came in like fourth in the televote. Not, they were like near the bottom after the jury vote. I think they got like 10. And then, but like the entire time they're doing the, calling out all the televotes, like, we're waiting for Poland to come through, and wow, it just jumped to the top.
It just brrrr,
so
that diaspora,
not,
though,
yeah, not the wrong choice as far as televote goes, but there was nothing jury friendly about it.
Not so much. Nice guy, though. Lovely guy.
Anyway,
shall we return to the randomizer of doom for our next question?
Yeah.
All right, this will be a quick one. This one comes also from John. He gave us a whole bunch. We collected these back in 2016, I think. They just kind of had a bunch of random stupid questions for interviews that we were like maybe going to use, and we never did. Because we didn't want to get expelled. Some of the questions are kind of weird. We might do them or not. This is a really quick one. Estimate the number of screwdrivers in Bolivia.
John, again, this Eurovision Ireland are truly friends of the show, but what the hell?
It's not a Sunday morning, so I'm going to say much lower than usual. I'd say, I don't know, 10,000? Being actively drunk at the same time?
I think you're talking about a different kind of screwdriver, sir.
Hi-o!
So there are about 11.5 million people in Bolivia.
At least that many screwdrivers.
It's got, well, yeah, I mean,
1 to 1 per capita.
Well, I mean, like, in a household, you don't just have one screwdriver in a household.
I think we have like 6.
Yeah, I mean, I have a kit with a dozen. If you count like the, you know, the little smaller one, those are screwdrivers.
And that's before we even count like what's in like your, like a professional mechanic's office or something like that. Or like your watchmaker, you know, the budding Bolivian watchmaking industry.
I mean, Danny, how many screwdrivers in your home would you say?
Probably between, you know, like the big one and like, yeah. We also have a tiny little pack with like the tiny little screwdrivers, you know, for opening up your PlayStation and voiding the warranty. Yeah, 8? 7?
Okay. All right, so, I mean, granted, some people in Bolivia are old and not allowed to have screwdrivers. Others are
babies
or infants. Infants babies. Generally do well, not have screwdrivers.
Are we counting like the little plastic screwdriver toys?
Oh, like how Tommy Pickles uses to open up the playpen.
Yeah. Like honestly, there's stuff like that. Because I mean, you keep in mind that like the biggest tire manufacturer in the world is Lego.
Is Lego? Yeah. Yep.
So
30 million. I'm saying 30 million.
30.
I would go a little bit higher. I would say 40 to 50 million screwdrivers.
I was going to say 50 million.
All right, Eric, look at the Statmotron. What is it?
It's 50 million. We were right on.
Christ!
It's amazingly even number.
Any listeners who are in Bolivia right now, start counting.
Yeah, like, count them up. Please let us know.
We expect an answer by next week.
The great screwdriver census.
All right. Should we get to a real question?
Yeah, so let's go for it.
Yeah. How many hammers in Bolivia? Hang on. Nope. Hang on. Okay. Let's... I really like this one. Somebody I've labeled Swedish Marcus.
Oh, this one. Okay, good. Yeah, I really hoped we'd get to this one.
Who is Swedish Marcus?
I believe Swedish Marcus's name was actually Swedish Marcus on Twitter. So.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. That's not just like a bunch of people named Marcus and this is the one from Sweden.
He's a Swedish Marcus. I mean, yeah.
Oh, from the Swedish Marcus.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Ironically, he's Danish. Yeah.
In AmericaVision, a.k.a. the American Song Contest, a.k.a. the thing that's definitely probably going to happen, In AmericaVision, which states do you think will/won't vote for each other?
Ooh.
Voting blocks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't think there's going to be a massive amount of differentiation between the states unless you go like super hyper regional. Like if I keep using the example of if Louisiana sends Zydeco.
Mm-hmm. Which they should.
But like what is, unless an artist is undeniably from a certain place, if they're using artists that we don't know and like people listen to country in Minnesota, they listen to country in Maine, they listen to country in South Carolina.
Well, that's so, what I mean is when we're not operating off of a pre-frame sort of pre-fame structure, I think then we are sort of looking at regional alliances. Okay. I was thinking like it really would not surprise me at all if we had like an Oregon-Washington block.
Mm.
And if New York refused to vote for Massachusetts.
Absolutely.
Like that's not happening.
I saw once a poll that was run about what states think of each other. What is everybody's favorite state other than their own?
Yeah.
And it seemed like all of the states around Minnesota, so North Dakota, South Dakota.
Minnesota.
Preferred Canada.
Yeah.
Noted state, Canada.
Was it nobody liked Florida, not even Floridians?
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could see, like, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina could potentially kind of glom onto one act if there's one that kind of stands out there.
Missouri, that's going to be a wild card.
Oh, we do all have that phenomenon where Minnesotans hate Iowa, Iowa hates Missouri, and Missouri hates Arkansas. Just keeps going down and down.
Oh, yeah.
Literally.
Mm-hmm. Louisiana hates the Gulf.
I know I do. We have 50 states, and I don't think Hawaii would really form a block. Alaska, I think if they formed a block with anyone, it would be sort of the Rocky Mountain states. Who knows?
If Hawaii is voting, if they expand. Well, California, but keep in mind, Guam. American
that's
Samoa.
Right. We have all of the big ones out there.
The Marianas, like those, that could be an interesting
block. Give me territories. I can see them forming a block just because they're the forgotten stepchildren.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Do you think a state like Alaska, because it's more remote, could have difficulty attracting votes in something like this?
They just said Portugal.
Because Alaska is just so...
Well,
It's unique. It kind of is its own place.
Well, unless, like Danny says, they send Portugal the Man featuring Jewel.
Well, I was going to say, it's like the Senate. It doesn't matter the size of your state. Everyone gets the same representation. We're all going to see these states.
Oh, suddenly I hate Eurovision.
I mean, there's a certain question, too. Like, if a state sent a particularly noteworthy act.
Lizzo,
yeah. Or anyone. Like, I mean, you can't think, like, oh, yeah, you'll get some voice guaranteed, like, from Belarus. But you know, there's always kind of the guaranteed votes. But then, like, if a country has a particularly noteworthy song, they can rely on a pretty huge backing from like their neighbors.
If
the quality's there. If it's a particularly bad song, it's like, well, no, we're still not voting for this. Mm-hmm. I can just imagine. I think any neighboring states would pretty much do it. I don't know if it.
I don't think there's rivalries, even sports rivalries, that are that strong.
Well, yeah, I mean, you bring up New York, Massachusetts.
I really think that probably could.
I feel like Minnesota, Wisconsin definitely comes to mind. Do the Dakotas help each other out here? I think they probably do.
I don't know. I feel like
they're basically one state.
Don't tell that to them.
What about the really sort of like forgotten states like Wyoming and Idaho? And, like, I mean, as far as, like, popular music, Utah, you know, like, what are we going to see from
Mormon
states like that?
Mormon Tabernacle
Choir.
Reduced to six people, obviously.
I mean, that kind of raises an interesting question, though. If you think about a state like Washington, there's the east side and the west side, which are very, very different.
Oh, yeah, that's the problem that we have here, is our states are bigger than your countries over in Europe. Like, it's not homogenous within these states at all.
Very true. But, so, I mean, the population centers and the cultural centers, you know, using a state like Washington, like, the difference in Spokane versus Seattle, geographically and culturally, are very, very different, but where the population balance is, it definitely skews more towards the Seattle area.
Let's say if you had an artist from Spokane, they might get that vote from, like, Idaho.
Yeah.
Whereas an artist from Seattle would probably get a more vote from Oregon and California.
Very I swear true, to God, if this true. Falls through, I'm gonna buy a gun.
This is America.
It's really easy to hear.
Yeah. I'm
glad we got to that.
Let's hurriedly move on to another question. here's another one that we really enjoyed. This is from our friend Olympia.
Yes.
Hello, Olympia.
Olympia Avalanche. Yeah. I mean, I love all of our listeners. Don't get me wrong. But I was actually sort of an Olympia and by extension Novimpia stan even before I realized that Olympia was also sort of a stan of ours. I've been following Olympia on YouTube for quite a while. If you've seen her Mrs. Crocombe parody, it basically split me in half. And then when I realized that she'd sent us an email saying, hey, we love your show, I nearly died. But yes, absolute, truly friend of the show.
Jeez.
Yeah, well done. So Olympia asks, with the obvious exception of the United Kingdom, which is probably the only correct and obvious answer, noted this is coming from a Brit.
We have to mention that.
Yes. Who would you disqualify for a whole year based on their entries from the past decade?
Oh, the United Kingdom. hang on. Can I change my answer?
Yes.
There are a lot of countries that I think of that just they sort of have a standout song that sort of redeems them, at least for a little bit. Like, I wouldn't want to just automatically disqualify them. Like, I think of Spain, but then I think of, I really liked La Benda. And I'm like, that's fine. That takes care of all of your other milquetoast entries. I don't think there's a song from Poland that has redeemed them within the past 10 years. Especially the past three have just been real, real snoozers.
I'm probably gonna tick off a bunch of people. I feel like Croatia needs to get their act together.
We've told you this before, and it's wrong.
I mean, it's getting better. I mean, Albina was...
It was called TikTok, right?
TikTok was okay, yes. Yeah. I mean, TikTok was a solid song. Wasn't performed perfectly on the night, but the song was good. It was definitely a upward trajectory.
Sure.
But
better than Sugar.
It barely lost to Norway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By five points in the semi, which I think should have gone the other way. But
since 2010, they have only qualified for the final twice. And one of those was Jacques Hudek.
Which was?
My friend.
Oh, no. Which came 13th.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is a country that I've loved. I've truly, truly loved some of the songs that they've sent in the past. 1998, Nekami Nesvane is magic. Maria Magdalena in 99 was incredible. Moja Shtikla from 2006, which is like perfect Balkan madness. And they just kind of fell off the wagon.
It's Balkan madness down at Al's Balkan cars.
Total Balkan madness.
So yeah, I just want Croatia to have a moment and just pull themselves together because I know that they've got it in them to do something incredible. Technically speaking, when Yugoslavia won the contest back in 1989,
it had the power of all of them combined.
Well, it was a Croatian artist backed by the Croatian broadcaster, and when they hosted it the following year, it was in Zagreb.
Do they take turns, kind of like Belgium does?
They kind of had like a Jugovisia kind of thing, and whoever won it. But it was kind of So Croatia, that is my pick. I love you, and I know you can do better.
Mm-hmm. All right, fine. I'm going to catch some serious heat for this.
Oh dear,
Sweden. I think Sweden needs to go back.
We can do it. Yeah, I'm behind this.
And take some time and really, I think they need to reinvent themselves. I think they need to take some more risks. I kind of, you know, they did great, you know, at the beginning of the decade, and it's just kind of been diminishing returns.
I mean, disqualifying them for like for their own good, like to just be in timeout for a little bit.
I think it would do them a lot of good to take a little bit of time off. Yeah, and just kind of rethink. I mean, it worked for Portugal.
Ukraine as well.
Yeah. Bulgaria to a certain extent. Mm. Like, they have this time to kind of really sit and think and really plan and kind of explore what different artists are out there and try some different styles.
Wouldn't
and
it
sort
be
of...
wild if Montenegro came back?
They are coming back. They blew it out of the water. Like, what if Montenegro wins
That's
this
the
year?
Trick. You need
what if Montenegro won UK 2? Like, what if...
Put your bets down now.
Yeah, heard it here first. Danny said the UK was going to win 2020 Eurovision and it was canceled. That's true. That's he did do that, by the way.
And that is a win for the UK.
I think so. They tied for first.
So my initial reaction to this was Belarus. Which is not super controversial.
Mission accomplished.
I don't think this is coming from a cultural standpoint, though.
Well, and yeah, because they've done this to themselves. But like, David Na was good.
So good.
Story of My Life was awesome. Uzari and My Moon is Time is one of my favorite non-qualifiers of all time. Help You Fly is really weird, and I kind of enjoy it. But they also did Cheesecake.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
here's the thing, that's the whole thing, is that that's why I couldn't pick Belarus, because Belarus has some perfectly fine, mm-hmm. passable songs.
Mm-hmm. And then there
meanwhile,
have been,
Poland. Yeah.
And there have been the times that Belarus have shot themselves in the foot, like the time that they had a perfectly serviceable pop rock song and then forced the artist to revamp the song against their will. This was 2012, Light Sound, the original version of We Are the Heroes would have been fine, but instead they made them do things that they didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's a story for another day, I think. Mm-hmm.
That's national broadcast for you. Yeah.
All right, spin that wheel again.
Yeah, spin it. Spin it, spin it, spin it.
We've got more than a couple left in us.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. From Carter S. from Twitter, for those of you who were involved, how did you get to be a part of the Bulgarian delegation?
Like a lot of the questions I think we could answer, the answer is Sam. I got involved. I wasn't in the delegation. I was in a jury to pick one of the songs, which ended up being Bones, mm-hmm. which was the song I recommended. So if...
You're welcome.
Yeah. I assume it was only me. I got into that. Sam basically recommended me to the folks who were looking for jurors, and I got to do that. And it was really, really cool. So thank you, Sam.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I imagine your story is more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I actually worked in 2015 at the Junior Eurovision Contest as a member of the EBU's crew, their editorial team for their main website, which was held in Sofia. So I got to know a bunch of the crew at BNT, and I was friends with Vasil, who up until very recently was their head of press. And
Vasil? Oh, different Vasil?
Different Vasil.
Okay. Is that like the John of that area?
Everyone's called Tommy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so we became friends, and the Bulgarian delegation returned to the contest in 2016, and we kind of reconnected. And for the 2017 contest, he had asked me to do some press work. So that's kind of how I did it. It's kind of who you know. And Derek.
And I know Sam. Yeah. Ultimately what it came down to.
Yeah, because you are a talented photographer. And they needed somebody to handle some of that for the Bulgarian delegation as well. So
I was happy to help.
Yeah. And so I continued on with them the following year with Equinox and Bones. And Derek, you kind of actually spun off a bit to the Austrian delegation that year.
I was a little late on the request. And by the time I was asking, Ovas was like, oh, we already got someone. But I could set you up with another country. I'm like, sure.
Hope you like Poland.
I'm sure. Yeah, and then Austria comes third, so I'm like, sweet.
Yeah, you ended up.
I'm like a lucky charm.
Yeah.
You are.
Just to stand around.
Yeah.
Azerbaijan, you got money. You're hiring Americans to do press work for you.
And you were, if you go back and you look at the postcard.
No.
For Chris Kostov, Sam and Derek are in that postcard.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, we both are.
Yeah, she's in the birthday scene.
I am.
Which was wild.
I wasn't told that we would be doing recording that day, so I didn't really do my hair or makeup. So I'm kind of self-conscious about it, honestly, but yeah, I'm there. I am in the scene. I'm sad that we didn't actually get to eat the cake that we got to decorate.
What?
Yeah, they...
Well, that's right. It was all
plastic.
Probably.
Yeah. So that was kind of...
Can't have real cake in Bulgaria?
It was a gasoline canister covered in frosting. We were in frosting. The petty frosting.
Yeah. So we were in Kyiv at the time.
Yeah.
And they filmed some of it in Ukraine, and then they filmed some of it on site. And I remember we went to this, like, bakery, and they were like, do you want to be in the birthday scene? And I'm like, I'm old enough to be his father, no thank you.
You know, if I was in a foreign country and they just came up to me and said, would you like to be in the birthday scene? I would say no, because I know those videos.
Those weird Eastern European videos where... They made a movie about this.
Anyway.
Moving on.
Yeah.
There's been the wheel question. Again.
Yeah, spin the wheel. Spin that wheel.
Spin it.
Spin.
Oh, I didn't respond because I hate Bulgaria.
Aww.
And I'll never go back.
What? You've never been there.
Shh.
I will say, Bulgaria and Ukraine, two countries where I've never eaten so well for so cheaply.
Oh, sure.
I still dream about the pork chop that I had at a restaurant called Podlipite in Sofia.
You know what they probably have over there? Cheese boats.
Cheese boat, yes.
Cheese boat.
God, I miss cheese boats. Anyway, what's our next question, Derek?
All right, actual question from Katie Proctor on Facebook. Question for you, the team. Do you think the number of 80s-inspired songs can be linked to the success of Think About Things? Or is it just an inexplicable coincidence?
I'm not sure Think About Things has that strong of an 80s influence.
I think just pop music in general over the last couple of years has had a natural 80s vibe coming up.
Well, I think we can just say like the 80s
kind of follows it.
80s vibe is just... When people say 80s vibe, they mean synth.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's it. I feel like that's it with synth riffs. And synth riffs are perfectly fine. This is an instrumentation that I would love to bring back.
Hmm.
Do it. We had a little bit of like a funk pop thing about 5 or 6 years ago, too. I was fine with that. But I don't know if we can tie this just to Dottie Frere. Dottie Frere was just the bellwether.
I would, as much as anything, tie it to Blinding Lights. As big of a just phenomenon as that was, and perhaps still is, I don't know. He got the Super Bowl. So... Yeah, I it's just synths are in.
Synth is in.
I think that's it. I would imagine though that Think About Things helped. I mean, I think a lot of prospective 2021 artists saw how well it was expected to do, and thought, well, I don't know if I can quite do that, but you know, perhaps we can put a sort of a retro charming twist to it.
Right. I mean, the fact that there are so many people who think that Eurovision music isn't necessarily relevant to what is relevant on the actual charts, like there's no connection, but there is. And I think that by saying that Eurovision music is somehow separate from what is actually popular and relevant to what people listen to outside of the contest.
I think a significant number of it is.
Right, exactly. I mean, and we see that in the commercial success that Dottie Frere has had. We see it in the commercial success that Måneskin is having now. Mm-hmm. They were just on Fallon this week.
Yeah.
Last week. Like,
so here's a kind of a random question I was thinking about. Do you think Måneskin would have done as well had they come to the contest like 5 years ago?
Yes.
Well, they would have been teenagers.
Junior Eurovision, frankly.
No. Hypothetically, if they were the same age, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, was the industry or the you know, the zeitgeist or whatever kind of open to something like that, or was this the year
that's
they needed to do it?
4 or 5 years ago, we were still, I mean, geez, we were still sort of like had two choices. Would you like folk musicians doing the millennial whoop, or do you want to listen to Taylor Swift? You know, I feel like we had those two choices 5 years ago.
I mean, that would have been 2016.
Sure, yeah.
And now Taylor Swift is just doing folk music.
Yeah!
It's the convergence.
She's in the market cornered, what can I say?
Yeah. Everything old is new again.
Well, rock and roll music has kind of been out of it since the mid-2000s. You know, Kings of Leon had sort of like a really potent resurgence of pure rock music in the early 2010s. But honestly, since then, the legitimate rock music has really been few and far between on the charts here.
I mean, I think it also just depends on what they were up against.
Yeah.
Like, do you put it in 2017 against Salvador and Chris? Do you put it in 2016 against Sergei and 1944 and Donnie Im? Throw Cool Me Down in there while we're at it. Like, I don't know. I think so many of these things are just... It was the song for the moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
2019, we were coming off of Toy and the wild, wacky exuberance of that. So Duncan really hit the mark for so many people. Mm. And then after the 2 years we'd had since the contest, I think Måneskin just being rowdy and energetic was super attractive in a way. And to be fair, the song in second was the exact opposite of that and did tremendously well.
Yeah.
But I wasn't surprised that something upbeat ended up being what we went for. Does that mean a ballad's going to win next year?
Maybe.
I don't know. They've kind of gone back and forth over the last few cycles. But
it's interesting to me that I was thinking about this the other day. We've had rock songs in the past. Mm-hmm. That like Ave Esh or Young Georgian Lolitas, I think those were excellent rock songs. Very different styles.
But they wound up just being sort of like other meals at the buffet.
Yeah, they kind of like they're like in the 20s, both of them.
Yeah.
Which is really unfortunate. Mm. And then this year comes out, Måneskin comes in first, and then Blind Channel comes in sixth. Like two rock songs that just did phenomenally well.
Yeah.
And it's just like, whoa, wait a second, this doesn't happen here. And it Blind just kind of seemed odd to me. Like, why this year?
Yeah, I don't know. It was in the water. Was it the fact that, I mean, Måneskin is... Was it the visual? Was it the engagement? Was it the Italian? Who knows? But it just seemed to hit a chord.
Mm-hmm.
Both with, you know, viewers at Sanremo, which we'd never, ever seen a rock song like that do that sort of well at Sanremo.
It was a big surprise.
Yeah. It was a fantastic surprise for me. But
extremely unlike anything else there. And we can say the same for Mahmood about 3 years ago, too.
Yeah, very true.
Very unlike anything else at the contest, and came very close to getting it for Italy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, gosh, thinking about in 2020, Pinguini Tactical Nucleari.
The Tactical Nuclear Penguins.
We were fawning over that.
Oh, yeah, I still do.
That was my second choice for the national.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would potentially put that, would love to put that in as well. Would love to see them give it another go.
Mm.
Yeah.
See if Italy would like to send another band at some point.
Pedophile.
I think we're going to get a lot of bands next year.
I was saying that just maybe 10 or so episodes ago. I want to see more groups. And I think I said it in relation to like Malawi. It was just like seeing them on stage, despite what happened to them. It was just like, you know, it's like being at a concert. I don't feel like I'm at Eurovision anymore. I'm seeing a legitimate band.
Which is something that we saw, and we kind of commented on when we were talking about our Turkey discussion with Manga. Back in 2010.
Oh, the country. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Remember that whole episode we did on Monday?
We just did Thanksgiving, yeah.
But, I mean, it was authentic. It was not putting on any airs and graces, but it felt like you were watching concert footage rather than just a Eurovision song. And that sort of difference, it made it kind of stand out, and it nearly took the win.
I think when we see a band, they're miming guitar and they're miming drums. Yeah. But when you see that, it's a lot easier to believe them as really earnest artists who don't have a production machine behind them. When you see just a lone performer, it's a lot more easy to just be like, okay, well, this, you know,
honestly,
just has everything behind her.
When it's a band and you have the people that are miming performing, it's a lot more believable than a solo act that has a sort of some... high hired backing. The one that I always think of when I think about this is Children of the Universe from 2014. She had a drummer on stage who was playing this fairly simple, definitely like programmed drum beat as if it was being played on a drum set. And it's really distracting.
A lot of staging problems with that one, though.
Yes.
Yike.
I love that song. That part of it just really... irks me whenever I think about it. Great song though.
Wow, this is taking a turn, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. What was the question?
It was I don't remember. It was the Dottie Frere.
Yeah,
eighties. Why do people like eighties?
That's right.
The thing.
So the answer is we're children of the universe. Children of the universe. Children of the universe.
On the edge. All right. Next question. Let's make it a fun and snappy one.
All right. Well, I've got just the thing, I think, and it's from our pal Richard Taylor at Eurovision Ireland, who asks, shout out to Ireland, friend of the show, of all the European landmarks you have visited, which one would you like to be?
Not would you like to see again. Which would you like to be?
I see.
I think I actually have an answer.
Yeah?
Oh, I have an answer.
What is it? I have an answer, but it's inappropriate.
Excuse me?
Derek, are you going to say the Icelandic Phallological Museum?
No.
Are you going to? Would you be the mannequin piece?
I saved a city by pissing on it. No. What?
I would say the Sagrada Familia in Barcelona.
Unfinished.
It's a work in progress. It's a work in progress. People look at it like, what the hell is going on? Until they actually get to see
it. It's very pointy.
And then it's very, very pointy and surreal. But it's kind of cool and you kind of have to see it up close and realize there's a lot going on there. But yeah, it's a work in progress and it's kind of colorful, but still a little weird. So yeah, Sagrada Familia. Mm-hmm.
I would be the Rijksmuseum so people could ride bikes through me. Hang on. No, I would be the Eiffel Tower so Tom Lieb could be in set. Hang on.
Oh. You're going to say, I would want to be the Eiffel Tower so no one can take pictures of me anymore. Yeah.
No, I would be Mini Europe.
Yes!
Of course you would.
Yeah, I would. Lovely. I would be Mini Europe because it's a little bit of everything. It's really dumb and somehow extremely lovable. That's me, baby.
Nice.
Derek.
All right. I want you to know this is a serious answer because I read this question the other day and I was thinking about like what like real landmark thing. And this is a serious answer. Again, mm-hmm. I stress. It's the Holocaust Memorial in Berlin.
Oh, the one that is just all of the stone.
Oh, just the
stone. All of the pillars. Yeah.
Yes. It's stark and beautiful and haunting and cool. And I understand there's a lot of meaning behind that. But when I was there, it was just mesmerizing. It was just so weird to walk in it and be a part of it and just see the different levels. And it was effective in a way I did not expect. Not that I want to be associated with the other thing.
Yeah, I was about to say.
But as an art piece.
The other thing?
The thing. I think it's an incredible piece of art. Mm-hmm. Just absolutely incredible. And I think for what it is, it does, you know, it leaves an impression. And I think that's really cool. And I don't know why, but it's like one of the things, like of all the places I've been in Europe, it's one of the things that really stands out in my mind as a place I've visited in a city that I didn't think was all that remarkable. Berlin is a nice city, but walking, and like as soon as we got there, I was just like, oh, this is something important.
Mm. Wow, that is not an answer I ever would have expected, but I'm actually kind of glad you did. Yeah, that was very cool.
Yeah.
Danny, what about you?
I'd be St. Vitus Cathedral in Prague. It took 600 years to build because no one had the funding, and the result is a cathedral that's different colors at different heights.
It's like,
and also, you know, like the portal of Notre Dame, like it has like all of these saints and everything, and mm-hmm. it's very medieval. The portal to St. Vitus's Cathedral also has like men in business suits because like it took that long to complete that they were like, oh, these people were also building it, so let's put this guy who just literally has like a microscope up there. That's good.
And also, you just can't stop dancing.
Yes. Also, yes, St. Vitus is the patron saint of dancers or people with dancing sickness. That fun dancing sickness where people would dance themselves to death. That's me. That's high aesthetic.
That's on brand.
Boy, this was a...
This is actually fun.
That was a journey we went on just now.
Yeah.
All right, let's spin the wheel a couple more times.
Yeah.
What do we have?
Okay, we've got another one here from our friend John from Eurovision Ireland, who takes a classic Eurovision quote and kind of turns it on its head. Channeling Norway's 2007 entry, love can be hard sometimes. Yes, it can catch you off guard like bad crimes. So, team... What's your favorite good crime?
Stealing a loaf of bread to feed your family.
Regicide.
I'm changing my answer to regicide.
Public intoxication.
Oh, yeah.
As long as you're not hurting anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is another crime. A bad crime, in fact.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the fun kind of public intoxication.
You know what I mean? In Minnesota, like, you're not supposed to, like... drink alcohol out in public.
I'd say that was the most appealing thing about being in Central Europe was it's just like, you know, in Budapest, it's just like, hey, drink. You're in a park. You can drink.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Yeah, like like give me a glass, you know, grab a bottle of wine from home and picnic blanket. Like, why are we not able to do that here? So, yes.
Right. So I drank a yard of beer in a park in Budapest.
That's just an appetizer in Budapest.
Yeah.
It's not alcoholic, so it's not alcoholic enough to be considered an alcoholic beverage. So it's
like the kvass in Russia and Ukraine that they give to kids.
Stealing from billionaires. Next question.
Mm-hmm. Like a Robin Hood type.
Yeah.
I'm right with that.
Doing a Robin Hood is the, I think, objectively the correct answer there.
All right, we have one from another oftentimes contributor to the contest, Edmund, a definite friend of the show. I was curious, how does Sam's or my ESC preview party work? Mentioned it a few times, and you all show all the music video, people vote on them, but how exactly do attendees vote? Thinking about hosting a virtual ESC preview party, want to know the best way to do it.
I'll tell you how it works. Pretty well. Next question.
Yeah, Eric is the one who sort of like made sure that everyone is able to vote on their mobile devices. Last time, what was the service that you used?
Oh, I just made survey? I just made a big Google form.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And then okay, so the Google form is for submitting the scores, and then you the next step, which was admittedly more complicated, was taking that spreadsheet that the answers go into and having it spit out averages and other information about voting. But if you're decent with like Excel or Google Sheets, it's not too bad. If anybody really wants to see kind of what it looks like, I wouldn't mind sharing something. I might have to like
all of his secrets.
Well, it's a simple numerical rank of 0 to 10. So
that's the other thing is we're not asking people to do like a 12, 10, 8 on everything. They're rating the songs from 0 points to 10 points. And honestly, the reason for that is it's so much simpler. People don't have to go back and like, okay, here are all the songs that you've only heard exactly once. You need to rank them. You know, that's not, it's a lot to ask, especially people who don't follow Eurovision as closely as like we do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But Sam, it's your party. Say more.
Well, I mean, you two kind of do the technical side. I do more of like the hosty side of it. Mm-hmm. And honestly, Derek actually does a sort of the arrangement of our running order. That's sort of his bid.
I guess the curated schedule.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you, tell us a little bit about like the sawtooth that you kind of do when you're creating a running order for our parties. Because we often do this before we know what the actual running order of the contest is going to be.
Derek always makes sure we end with a dud.
Yep.
Gotta leave him hating everything.
And here's Maruv. Jerks.
Oh, yeah, that was the worst to see that at the end and being like, and guess
I'm gonna
what?
Change my
it's
answer.
Not allowed to compete.
I'm going to change my answer from earlier. That's the one I won in the contest.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Another one that quite realistically could have done.
Could have taken it big time.
Could have taken it.
Oh,
yeah. if it
absolutely.
Was in.
I think the interesting thing about the party is just how much goes into getting it all set up just to make it seem so seamless. I think one of the things, like, putting the play order together, kind of going through the list and just identifying, like, making sure there's a balance of male-female artists, so it's not like here's 10 females in a row and then 5 males in a row. Making sure that there's, like, more high-energy songs versus, like, lower-tempo songs, kind of alternating. Make sure there's not, like, weird jarring shifts in tone, though sometimes that's unavoidable.
Yeah, you wouldn't have been able to go from, you say, Amar Pelosh Deutsch to, you know, Vishlat Niar. That would be whiplash.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. Actually, what am I saying?
So, and like, but just like kind of putting lists together, getting people invited, making the score sheets and kind of making sure that there's a system for that. Finding a location where we can have all these people come in. And it's sort of an open invite thing where they can just show up and leave as needed. Mm-hmm. Sometimes these contests can go a little bit long. And we try
it
to
tends,
streamline them.
Yeah, it tends to be a really long day.
Because it's 2 hours of music, effectively.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then we're
just
often,
nonstop.
Yeah, and then we're often talking about the songs in between, you know, giving people a couple of, you know, a minute or so to vote. And it's a lot. So honestly, a lot of the fun is making sure that people are fed and and beveraged. You turn it into a potluck, have people bring food. I try to make it sort of thematic based on where the contest is actually being held. So if it's going to be in Israel, make sure that there's some great Middle Eastern food and you know, the best hummus that you can find or make. In Derek's case, by the way, Derek makes a fantastic hummus.
It's Israeli style hummus from the New York Times recipe. It's super easy.
So good. So super good. But yeah, just try to make it fun and thematic. And, you know, if you are one who drinks and your friends do as well, you know, make that, you know, have that as an option. I made a fantastic Vino Verde based sangria for the contest that was held in Lisbon.
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, just have fun with it. Just have fun with it. Whether you're doing this in person or doing this remotely, like we've done for the last few years, there's a way to make this work. And, you know, if you have questions about how we do our show, again, listen to what we've been talking about for the last couple of minutes, or just email us. We're happy to give you tips as well.
The other advice I have is to make Swedish meatballs.
Yes. Yes. Eric makes a fantastic Swedish meatball. Yeah,
I have a recipe. And honestly, if you want this, I'll share this too. It is from a church cookbook from Mankato, Minnesota. It is just the most Lutheran cookbook you can imagine. and it has a recipe for Swedish meatballs, and they're incredible. That reminds me, I need to be sure to bring this on the show at some point. I was at a thing called the Butterfield Threshing Bee a few months ago.
Ah.
This is like the Pawnee Harvest Festival, except it's real, and it's small. It is a rural county fair in the middle of nowhere, Minnesota. It's in the town where my mom grew up, Butterfield, Minnesota. And it is a delight. It is the most delightful place. There is a Lefse booth. There is a tractor parade. There are kittens in a cage. There's a horse. When I was there, I got, you know what, I might even actually have it.
Show and tell. You do realize this is an audio-only podcast.
I do have it. It's the Book of Scandinavian Food and Fun. Yeah, it's great. I bought it. I think I might be a distant relative of whoever made this. But it's got recipes for buns or honey jumbles or groot milk mush porridge. And that's just the food. There's also the fun. For instance, we have lyrics to weird Scandinavian songs. Mm-hmm. But then we have the fun. Old home remedies. You ready for this?
Oh, God.
Sure cure for diarrhea.
Oh, Jesus.
Scrape off the crumbs of burnt toast and add 1 tablespoon of sugar and eat. That's it.
Does it work?
I don't know.
I don't know. We all had Indian food.
Too. Yeah, we can all try it later. So anyway, that's the fun in Scandinavian food and fun.
They had nothing else to do but sit around and invent wacky diarrhea cures.
Wow.
Oofta.
All right, let's have maybe 2 more questions. We'll do a quick one and then one last hoorah. Derek, what does the Wheel of Doom tell us?
Oh, jeez. This is my favorite John Stanton question. I'm so glad we got it in here.
Okay.
How many sausages could you eat in a month if you weren't allowed to sleep?
Oh, God.
No, the sausage is one of my least favorite foods.
Well, John Stanton, why am I friends with you?
Because he's fun.
That's true.
So how... Okay, I have a follow-up question. I have a few questions. But my biggest one is, how is the you're not allowed to sleep bit enforced? Like
caffeinated sausage.
Uh-huh. The rules are on the task.
Espresso sausage.
And also, are we talking like... Are we talking like cocktail weenies? Or are we talking like those giant...
Polish kielbasa.
Like,
I was thinking... I'm going to use a phrase that I'm going to regret. Moderate-sized sausage.
Yeah, if they're... I'm gonna say the answer is... because I can do any size sausage I want, they're going to be little smokies, I can eat a pack a day. That's
okay.
It.
Jeez,
yeah.
That's a lot.
So
that's
what
like
is that?
A pound of sausage.
108 little weenies.
I mean, are we talking like regular groceries, or are we talking like Costco packet?
Oh, grocery. Oh, yeah, Costco packet.
Okay,
yeah, like
Costco.
Kind of
oh,
just get
it,
from
yeah.
Sam's Club. Yeah.
All right.
That's it.
All right. Oh, gosh.
That's it. Too many. Too many is the answer, I think, for all of us.
Are we eating the same kind of sausage,
yeah,
or
are
we varying things up?
Yeah, it's the same kind.
Rules are on the tab.
Ooh. Rules are on the table.
I think the easiest answer for this is I could probably eat about 2 a day, and then I'm like, okay, that's enough of that.
Yeah,
and then after 4 days, I'm dead because I haven't slept.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
That's about where I was at. It's
yeah.
just like at some point I would just die. So I don't think the number is very big.
Also, just like the sheer sodium count would probably just pickle you from the inside out, wouldn't
yeah.
it?
Mm. Give you liver cancer. Don't know about sodium.
Well, according to the Scandinavian Book of Food,
what is sausage cure?
I'm actually looking for anything sausage related, and I don't see any. Apparently, my people don't eat sausage.
Norway is not a big sausage culture.
Yeah, I could make rocks. Wait, what? It says rocks. All right,
that's where they come from. Norway's second biggest export is rocks.
That's all they got. Tear down the fjords, ship it overseas.
Oh, all right. Shall we take one last question?
Yes.
Yeah.
And wrap this up. I know that it's been a marathon of a show.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But I've been loving this.
100 shows.
All right. One last question. This one, we're kind of saving this one for last, just because it is so imaginative and so fun. And bear with me here, because I'm going to... This comes with examples. Craig Butterly reached out to us. I think we had a...
Is that a real name? That sounds like a, if I had to pretend to be...
I was roommates with a Chase Butterworth III. Listen, Craig Butterly can be his real name.
I'm just saying, if somebody... If I had to pretend to be British and make up a name, that's what I would have said. I'm sorry, Craig. It's a fine name. I just... I'm in awe.
Stephen Featherbottom.
Name. Yeah.
So, Craig Butterly asked, you said any questions? So, if you can design a D&D item or spell based on something from Eurovision, what would it be and what would it do? And he's got some examples here that I have to share with you. Mm-hmm. The Gorilla Suit of Karma. Anyone that approaches the wearer of the suit must make an investigation check of 13+. If they fail, they're unable to think of or do anything other than ask why the wearer is in a gorilla suit, why they're there, or what the suit is all about.
So what's up with the man in the gorilla suit? What's that all about?
That makes another investigation check of 1 lower until they pass. Or the giant hamster wheel, an item. While using, player gets +10 speed, advantage on acrobatics checks, and disadvantage on stealth. The Duncan's Orb.
This is the best one of all the examples.
The caster creates a luminous orb that floats around the head height of the user for about 3 minutes and can be asked how many pennies in the slot, and the orb will dispense 2d20 copper pieces.
Yeah.
Or, finally, the Curtain of Sparks spell. Caster creates a wall of falling sparks to both block enemies as well as to impress them. Higher levels also create puffs of flame from the ground. Cost to cast is 6 gold for the initial curtain and 4 gold for each extra flame. I don't know how we're going to top these examples that Craig has given us.
So I brought an example.
The amount of gold there is pretty accurate for pyrotechnics.
Yeah,
so the spell that I came up with was called Albert's Abjurative Square. Caster conjures a shining, beguiling white frame that gives the caster +10 to perform and persuasion checks for the next 10 rounds, but only for judges, magistrates, and other similar NPCs. Immediately afterwards, the caster must roll a whiz save to avoid 1d12 plus caster level force damage caused by the entirety of Europe not caring at all.
Oh,
oh wow. I can't follow that.
Yeah.
Jeez, I thought I read a pretty good one.
What if we're going to have Albert Cheney on the show one time?
Oh, Albert. Albert,
come on the show.
Seriously.
Redemption.
What do you have to lose?
The
we might be able to help you with Lucy. You never know.
I was going to say the Quiff of Destiny.
From Destiny's Quiff. Yes, I see.
It's equipment. So when you equip the Quiff of Destiny, you are automatically duplicated. So there are now two of you. And you have the fighting power of two hyperactive Irishmen with Haribo running through your veins.
I see, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Derek, Eric. Don't leave us hanging here, guys.
I mean, what was the spell that got running scared of victory?
The Curtain of Sparks.
Oh, okay.
yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Sure as hell wasn't the Gorilla Suit of Karma.
Yeah.
Say the Sir Hat Look of Charming.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know much about D&D, so I can't throw some dice numbers and stuff at you. But it just kind of popped into my head was like, yes, the Sir Hat Monocle. A +2 charm.
Oh, God.
Oh, yes.
Equip it on the head slot. Yes.
You equip it and you get to be inside your mind.
mine is just a butter churner.
Yeah.
It's
mundane equipment. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It removes almost all armor. But increases charisma by an enormous amount.
Yes.
And that's as far as I got.
Cannot be used against British jurors.
Mm. I see. They all have drawbacks.
Mm-hmm. Don't they all?
So which one of us is making a Eurovision D&D campaign? Is it
Danny?
It's
gotta be Danny. God. It's gotta be Danny.
It would be me. Yeah.
It would be all you. Right. Well, I have not played a role-playing game since I was in college.
Can you believe it? An entire campaign of nothing but bards.
You would love that.
Actually, yeah. I would.
We didn't get out of the inn initially. We just started an orgy.
Yeah, that's it. God, you have no clue.
I cast Song Along.
Ooh.
And this just diverts into your past characters for some reason. I don't know. I don't really fully know how D&D works. So it's weird. I'm a complete nerd, but I'm not that kind of nerd, like, at all. I don't know. It's just never been.
What a shame.
Well, you know what?
Danny, if you ever decided to go in this direction, I would do this.
Well, everyone tune in to episode 101 in 2 weeks when we will be just turning into just the Eurovision version of the Adventure Zone. It'll be great. So we're a D&D podcast now.
Yep. Surprise!
God, can you imagine? Did a special episode on just that.
Well, again...
Heard worse ideas.
Yeah.
We thank you so, so much for all these amazing questions. We still have a ton that we are probably going to delve into for future episodes. Let's be real here. We've got a lot to work with, and we could not have done it without all of you. Massive, massive thank you to those who submitted the questions that we've read on this episode, and to all of you who got stuff that we've got in the tank now for episodes to come. We have got some great, great stuff coming down the pipeline, of course. Eurovision 2021, we are still getting news on all the wonderful things that we're going to expect in Turin. We've got great things developing for 2021's Junior Eurovision in Paris.
We're going to have boots on the ground.
Yes, boots on the ground indeed. We've got a special series of episodes coming up soon on our YouTube channel, believe it or not, so you can actually see us as well as listening to us. I apologize in advance, but if you want to see Danny's reaction to Winnie Pooh.
And you will.
Keep your eyes feasted on our YouTube page.
Yeah, that'll be, by the time you listen to this, that'll be up there and you can watch that.
Yes, yes, yes.
Among others. Yeah. Yes.
Again, you can always reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at 12pointsUSA or just email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. Find us on YouTube, find us on our Redbubble page. Tell a friend, share the joy, share the misery. And we would be deeply, deeply grateful. We are pondering at this point. We haven't necessarily made massive strides, but we are pondering potentially starting up a Patreon in the not-so-distant future. Again, if you have ideas on what you would like to see from a Patreon...
Yeah, what would you pay us to do? We're open-minded.
Well, I've been in those birthday videos.
But again, we could not have done all of this crazy stuff without you. We thank you so, so much for being on this crazy ride with us. We are so excited to see what's coming in the next 100 episodes and beyond. Guys, shall we call this a night?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I think that's a good thing to call it.
Well, I suppose we will catch you on episode 101. But until then, my friends, I've been Samantha.
I've been Derek.
I've been Eric.
And I've been Danny.
And America...
Stop listening now!